The Arena, a multi-platform gaming news podcast, is brought to you by, well, of course, you. If you want to learn more about how you can support the show, go to patreon.com/expat2020. Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Arena, a multi-platform gaming news podcast. This is episode 37. I'm your host, Expat, along with my co-host, Dan. Dan, how you doing, man?
Hello there. Yeah, all right. What's new? What's going on?
Golden Week has come and passed. It's weird, man, because yeah. Golden Week, you get Saturday, Sunday, obviously, the weekend, and then you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off. They're like national holidays. But then you got to go back to work for Thursday and Friday. So it doesn't really feel like a true golden week.
It's like golden 5 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Explain to the folks who don't know, why does Golden Week happen? What is it?
So Golden Week is a combination of national holidays. There's a Children's Day. There's Respect for the Aged Day, for example. It's a combination of three different holidays. Showa Day is one of those days, at the end of April, on April 29th. So that is the birthday of the former Emperor Showa, Emperor Hirohito to most people in the West, who passed away over 20 plus years ago. So, it's a combination of national holidays. So, a lot of working people, they take a vacation, but this year, a lot of people still stayed at home, you know, because of the COVID situation out here. And people are still wondering whether the Olympics are actually going to take place or not, or if the International Olympic Committee is going to be able to send representatives out here, if any of the athletes are going to be able to come out. It's a real mess. I mean, it's crazy right
it
now.
It is. Yeah. And like, there's a lot of the morale among the athletes as well about having to perform in distanced and empty arenas.
Yeah.
It's going to suck.
Yeah. So today's special guest, he's our honorary third member, Burly Men Gaming. Burly, welcome back to the show again.
And, hey.
Burly, I heard that you were playing Pokemon Snap. And Pokemon Snap is, of course, a new game that was released about a week ago, actually. So tell us a little bit about Pokemon Snap and what your thoughts are of the game and what you've been playing the past week or so and streaming as well.
Hey, thanks for having me back again, guys. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here, man.
As you stated, I have been playing the new Pokemon Snap. I streamed it. It's been a lot of fun. I didn't grow up playing the original. I played a little bit of it, but as a Pokemon fan, I was like, okay, you know what? I should try this out, see how it plays, and what's all the hype about this, because they hadn't had a sequel in like 20 years. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I do have my little issues and complaints with it. It's a little grindy, because I finished the game. And for me to get to the rest of the Pokemon that I have yet to snap pictures of, I have to re-go through every level, grind up my research level by taking better photos. And then it'll unlock new paths to then for other Pokemon to come on the route.
Cool.
And I'm a little disappointed that for the series that's got about 1,000 Pokemon now, you only get 214.
Wow.
That are in there. And I got like 160 or 170 I found.
So that's like hell.
Come on. Like you can give a little bit more. Like Bandai Namco did give a good job, but I have the feeling of, hey, there's going to be the DLC season pass will be announced 2 months from now or at E3.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
It strikes me as a game that it's got 4 hours plastered all over it. It's got 4 hour playtime. It just, the whole thing screams to me like, you'll be done. You've seen all you can see and you've pretty much nailed it in 4 hours. What do you reckon? Is that a lengthy,
the campaign took me probably about 12 to 13 hours.
No way.
Yeah, no, the campaign's a fair length. A little bit of it is, hey, you've got to redo this again. Some bits there's a little bit of that, but I honestly can't recommend the full price tag of it unless you're hardcore. I know Nintendo barely does drops, but just wait for a used shop or something, or when Nintendo takes it off quite a bit of the price. That would be the honest best way to pick it up.
All right.
And Burley, what else have you been playing this week and streaming?
What else have I been playing? I'm slowly working through Dragon Quest III on my own time. Mm-hmm. But I finished Myth 2 Soulblighter. It was Bungie's last game before they did the Halo series.
Oh yeah.
I would say I'd been streaming Oddworld Soulstorm, but frig, I got to level 11 on that game on streaming it and said, no thanks, my time is worth more than the aggravation this is going to give me.
I put that down as well for a while.
The throw controls in that,
yeah,
the aiming on that is the worst ever.
Have you picked up Returnal or Resident Evil Village yet?
Returnal, no. Returnal looks good, but I cannot justify, because if you were to buy that game physical, it's over $100 here in Canada.
Flippity flop.
So hell no. Even on PSN, I would just pay $89.99. In Canada, but it's like without the, I know it's the whole kind of gameplay you can't save during your run, and it's like,
yeah,
with the whole patches and stuff like that, it's like I will try this game when I can get it for like $20-$30 or less.
Yeah,
but Resident Evil I did pick up. I got that pre-ordered. Thankfully, when I cleared out some games, I got rid of some old shitty games that were worth nothing, but the GameStop of Canada had promotions where you trade in three titles that are worth $10, you get a free pre-order, fully paid. So it paid for Resident Evil. I've got that. I can't get to try it till Monday, but I'm looking forward.
Cool.
Oh yes.
All right. So in this episode today, we're going to be talking about Sony and crossplay. We're going to be talking about Returnal, actually, and some of the problems it's been having. And Nintendo, the Switch has a new game coming just before E3. We're going to be talking about that a little more. And our topic of the show, we're going to be talking about Star Wars games, because this last week was Star Wars week, along with, of course, the new game releases. So right after this message about where you can find the podcast, Dan and I will be talking about what we've been playing.
Yay!
Before Dan and Expat discuss what they have been playing, this episode of The Arena, a multi-platform gaming news podcast, will be going up on Patreon at patreon.com/expat2020 in early access for the first 3 days after recording. So if you would like to support the show and become a patron at the entry tier 1 level at $1 per month, and get early access to every episode and listen ad-free, along with other perks, including exclusive post-show content after every show, plus special bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/expat2020 for further details. On Tuesdays each week, the podcast will be uploaded to all of the free podcast services, or you can find us on any podcast app for iOS or Android, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Expat's YouTube channel, Expat2020 Gaming. Just download your favorite podcast app or open Spotify and search for The Arena Multiplatform Gaming News Podcast. Subscribe, follow us, post a review, and leave us questions, comments, and feedback if you like, if that feature is available there, and spread the word about the podcast. We also have a Discord called the Arena Podcast, where you can join and chat with the Arena Podcast community, and a website at expat2020.podbean.com, where you can follow us and leave questions and comments as well. Finally, you can also follow us on Twitter at the Arena AMPGNP, as well as on Instagram at the Arena _podcast. Now, back to the show.
So, Dan, I've been playing Judgment on PS5.
Oh, good. Oh, did you buy? Oh, so you didn't have the game, you bought the game.
I bought the game for 30, was it 39 on PS5? Yeah.
That's a good game.
And, it's an awesome game. I'm loving it. I'm loving every minute of it. The main character, Yagami, he's really, really interesting. And, I don't think this is spoilers, but I mean, at the beginning of the game, he's an attorney.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about Japan, you get to, I mean, with the Yakuza games, you get to learn a lot about Japanese culture. But I mean, in this game, what's really interesting at the beginning is you find out, and this is pretty true in Japanese society, that 99%, for example, those who are charged with murder, 99% are convicted. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's impossibly high.
Yes, yes. And the thing about Yagami in this game is he's a defense attorney. And there was a case at the beginning of the game where he won, which was almost unbelievable to all of his coworkers and to everybody else. And the person that he acquitted, basically, like a week later, stabs his, you know, girlfriend and sets the whole place aflame. And basically, Yagami is like, you know, just it hit him so hard that he basically, you know, quit being a lawyer and became an investigator. And in the game, of course, it's a fictional part of Tokyo called Kamurocho, which is actually Kabukicho. And it's just so fun to walk around in, like, you know, literally, I'm going to call it Kabukicho. In the game, it's called Kamurocho, but I mean, it's basically Kabukicho. I mean, just going to convenience stores, like I was playing last night, and I went into a convenience store as part of one of the missions, and I just bought a Boss coffee because I wanted to, you know? So, it's so fun to just go and they mapped the actual district of Kabukicho for this game, like in a lot of the Yakuza games and, you know, some of the early Yakuza games, which they did for Osaka as well. Like
it's the same map.
Yeah, it's exactly the same map. So I mean, I'm like walking. So I'm like walking around places, and you know that I've been to and stuff. You know, like the Don Quixote and everything is so fun, and the story is really riveting, and it's very fun, and I'm looking forward to playing more of it because I never played it on PS4, so I can't really talk about the graphical comparisons, but on PS5 it's very pretty. I mean, that's all I can say. I'm sure it was very, very pretty on PS4 as well, but PS5, I mean, with the enhancements, it's you know, something to see and something to play. So any of you out there who haven't played Judgment yet, if you have a PS5 now, pick it up. I highly recommend it. So it's a great game. That's it for me. Dan, what have you been playing this last week?
I just want to give you some advice about Judgment first. Like you said, you bought the coffees and that. I dismissed all that stuff to my peril. I dismissed the idea of like all the like drinks and boosts and temporary effects give you. Later in the game, you will rely on them. So when you get into the crazy fights later in the game, have a stock of all the things that boost your defense, boost your strength, boost your speed. Keep a friggin' pile of that. Because I got about 2/3 through the game and I had like a billion yen. And I'm like, well, what's the point? What have I got this money for? I don't understand. It still wasn't buying any of these potions, and I was banging my head against the wall during the combat.
Yeah.
So once you start paying for these supplements, you know, it all kind of balances out. So it's there for a reason. But I'm glad you're playing. It's friggin' awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Just one more point I want to make, too. One of the voice actors in the game, actor, Pierre Taki, probably most of you out there in the West don't know who this is, but a Japanese actor. Basically, in 2019, he was arrested for suspected cocaine possession. And so at that point, the actual game Judgment was it was withdrawn from the market here in Japan because of that. And yeah. And so basically the Western version had a different actor put in place for the voice acting and everything. And then it was re-released. Yeah. But yeah, man, it was a big deal out here, because if you get caught with drugs in Japan, you're dust. You're gone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I mean, even with marijuana or something, man, you get caught with a little bag, you're dust, you know. So
I remember when I went to work for the dispatcher companies doing English language teaching, like we had a Japanese policeman come in and give us a talk like we were at fucking primary school. It was brilliant. It was like, now you white boys, you stay away from the drugs. And like he said something interesting, like, and he's like, oh, there are no drugs in the in Japan. There are no drug factories in Japan. And I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, there are both of those things, but, you know, according to you, there aren't. And yeah. And another thing worth mentioning about the whole Judgment thing is, like, in Japan, everywhere else in the world, most places in the world, it's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
But in Japan, it isn't. No. Japan has what's called...
You're guilty.
In Japan, it's called Napoleonic law, and you have to prove your innocence. So when you go in that courtroom, you've already been sentenced, and you have to prove that it wasn't you.
And that's...
Even then... Yeah, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, and that's what is, you know, with Yagami's character... That's his issue. It's like, what happened to being innocent before proven guilty? And that's one of the things that made him quit being a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that, you know, it's like every case, I mean, it's like you're basically guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
I mean, Japanese jails are full of innocent people. I mean, it's not even, you know, that's a fact. Because if you're walking past a crime, a Japanese policeman can grab you and go, you did this. If you don't admit to it, we're going to drag your family in. And imagine the shame it's going to bring to your family. Just confess, it'll all go away. And so the poor bastard goes, yeah, it was me. Fucking that's you. Bars. Yeah.
Oh my
God. That's it. You're done. that counts as a tick. The crime's been solved. Tick. So that's how they get their 99% success rate, which is impossible.
Yep.
Impossible to have that without fudging numbers and without just arresting innocent people.
Yep.
Yeah. It's generally like, seriously, like as a whitey living in Japan or a foreigner living in Japan, keep your fucking head down.
That's right.
Seriously, do not engage with police. And if you do get stopped by the police, say jack shit and sit down on the floor. If there's anything I can tell you to do, that's there are whole websites devoted to what to do about if you're pulled over by the police in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's nuts. Anyway, sorry. But do go to Japan. It's awesome. We're derailing this podcast, but I only ever got pulled over once in Japan. I was just walking through a station. I was a bit late, so I was really, you know, walking at speed.
Yeah.
And it's quite a young Japanese policeman. I think he just wanted to, like, you know, prove himself, or maybe, you know, show how tough he was. I don't know. But he, like, pulled me over. He's like, where are you going? What are you doing? What's in your hands? I'm like, well, my hands are empty. You can see that I'm just walking down. I'm late for my train. Yeah. And a nice, like an older officer, like maybe in his 50s or so, hurries over, and like, he's the good cop. So he's like, hey man, how you doing? I'm like, yeah, hey, how you doing? And so we both shut up the younger cop, and like me and this older cop are just talking like, yeah, I'm going to meet my friend at Disneyland, I'm a bit late, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And that's the only time I've ever got into trouble. Well, not in trouble, but that's the only contact I had with police. Yeah. But
so just one more thing also I want to point out.
Go on.
And this is, was breaking news the other day. Judgment is getting a sequel, and it's called Lost Judgment, and it's coming out in September of this year. So
exciting stuff.
Yes. And also in the news, they talked about the Yakuza series is going to be becoming turn-based. So when it comes to the combat system, it's going to be turn-based, whereas the Judgment games will continue to keep the formula, the combat formula of the previous Yakuza games. So that
I've
was
still
in
not
the
played them. I've still not played 7 yet. Well, it's not called 7, that's the point. It's called Like a Dragon, which is a very important distinction. So I haven't played Like a Dragon yet. And I don't know, is that drastically turn-based? Interesting.
Yeah, they started to put the turn-based elements into 7. And so basically they decided, okay, with every existing game that comes out later on, it's going to be a turn-based system. So,
but I wonder if... Again, I don't know what happened at the end of 6, so I don't know if there's going to be a numbered Yakuza game coming along. So maybe there'll be actually a Yakuza 7, which would be, again, keeping with the punchy, fisty, fighty, and Judgment punchy, fisty, fighty. And this Like a Dragon series, so Like a Dragon 2, will follow the RPG route.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that? That sounds quite interesting. Because I can't imagine the Yakuza series. Who wants to be like, you know, Kiryu and go around being, oh, yes, attack Thug 2 using fist, go. You know, so...
I do, but I get to play. I'm a turn-based. Right. I'm a turn-based RPG junkie, but
I. Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah, it's good, but it's just not. It's not what the series. It's like if Halo became a board game.
Yeah.
It's like it's so removed.
Okay, Dan. So what have you been playing, man?
20 minutes later, I have
all right, no problem.
I've been playing a shed load of Dentia de Go. Both. On the Switch and on the PS4. And I have to say, it's beautiful on the PS4. I'm almost wincing at the thought they'll release a separate PS5 and make you buy the bloody game again. But it looks pretty damn good on the PS4. I'm not going to lie. It has VR, but I haven't tried the VR yet. So basically, if you don't know, everyone, that's a train driving simulator game. Started as a very important arcade game back in the day and came to the PlayStation. It's always been on Sony machines. There was one on the N64 and one on the PC and Saturn and Dreamcast, actually. But it hasn't been around for a while. There was a mobile game a few years ago, but this one came out last year in December on the PS4, came out in March this year for the Switch. It's a return to the series based on a very, 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 very impressive arcade game that came out in 2018, I want to say. It's basically a Japanese train sim. So you hop on the famous Yamanote line, which is the Japanese, the Tokyo loop. And you drive around that. And you see some landmarks and some sights, and it's beautiful. And I get really, I love it. And it also depresses the shit out of me because I think, I used to ride that all the time.
Just when you look at a map of Tokyo, if you see the green circular circle on the map, that's the Yamanote line. Yes.
I mean, if you go on like a tourist holiday to Japan, you'll be living on that thing. That will be your home because that's got all the hotspots are on the Yamanote line. All of them. Yeah. Akiba, Ueno, Shinjuku, Harajuku, Shibuya, Shinagawa. Yep. They're all on there. So if you end up in Tokyo, you'll end up. And there's a Chuo line as well. So you can the Chuo line cuts straight through the center of Tokyo, which is exciting. Yeah.
I mean, if you take the local Yamanote line, you could be on that thing for hours going around.
You can do it in the game. It's like a 5-hour run or something. Well, it's not a 5, but it's very lengthy. You know, it's like, there's 33 stations. I can't remember. I'll Google that, but there's a lot of stations. So that's what I've been doing. I've been playing lots of that. And last night, yesterday, I realized I've never actually finished Sonic 1 on the Mega Drive. So I was playing Sonic 1 on the Mega Drive. Cool. And I got quite far and I just got bored and started playing something else. that's it. That's my week in games.
Cool. Okay, let's jump to the weekly news beat. So story number one, of course, we've had all this drama with the Apple and Epic lawsuit. It's in court and everything going on with that. And all these documents are coming out. I mean, one of the documents was talking about how Xbox consoles don't make any money. They don't turn a profit, which is probably not surprising. But anyway, I mean, but then also we got some news about Sony and, of course, making Epic Games pay for Fortnite crossplay. My question to you guys is, I don't want to get into all the details about, you know, about all of the documents pertaining to why, you know, Sony was making Epic Games pay. But I mean, my question to you guys is, do you think Sony would have relented? Because they relented due to enormous pressure from Fortnite players over not allowing crossplay, whereas, you know, the other, you know, console makers were allowing players to crossplay. So do you think PlayStation would have really relented if it weren't for the negative publicity it was receiving over not allowing crossplay? You guys think, Burley? What do you think of this? I'll start with you first on this one, man. What do you think?
No. Unless it's a PR nightmare, they're not going to change their stance. Because let's be honest, they don't care unless it's going to go back on them negatively for PR. Mm-hmm. They don't care. Fortnite to them is not their. It's not a franchise they own or can control. Mm-hmm. So it's like. They're just trying to say, hey, you got to play by our rules. We're Sony.
Yeah. Dan, what about you, man?
Yeah, no, they wouldn't have. It just seems really weird that they're so against it. Yeah, there's no way. If people hadn't gone, "Oi, we want this," it's strange. It makes you wonder how much pull like Epic has, though, because like Fortnite is the biggest game on the planet.
Yeah,
and so it makes you wonder if Epic went, "Well, fuck you, then we're not going to put it on your machine." So if people want to play the biggest game on the planet, they'll have to go to your competitors.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder how much clout that would have done. Because then Sony's like holding their dick going, "Oh, well, everyone's playing the world's biggest game."
Yeah.
On everyone else. And we're just sat with our thumbs in our asses. Because, yeah, I think I mean,
they might have done that. And then, you know, all the Fortnite players, you know, was the final straw of like, you know, just freaking go somewhere else. Yeah.
I'll play it on a play. I'll play it on my. I can. You play on your frigging phone. You can play it on Stadia. You can play it. You know,
on Xbox. Yeah, you play it anywhere.
I don't think you need. Yeah, I don't think you need a particularly hench PC to play it either. So I mean, it's not like it's not like there aren't alternatives that are within everyone's reach, that are within capable reach of 90% of players.
Yeah.
So yeah, or maybe Epic should just go, "Well, sodja, take my ball and go home with it."
Yeah.
And oh, it's not like they're hurting for money. Like Epic's making on those other three platforms, people are still playing it crazy amounts. So, you know, they're still making billions and billions of pounds even without Sony's engagement. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a dick move by Sony, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. Like, what's their official stance? Why are they so against it?
Yeah. Because
I don't know what.
Probably because of the profits and everything. So the profits they're making.
I don't know. It's bonkers.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Okay, speaking of PlayStation, let's go on to story number two. So you know, Dan, you're not playing Returnal yet. I know that.
No, neither am I.
Burly, you're not playing it yet either. We had Sad Boy G, shout out to Sad Boy G. He was our guest last week on the show, and he's playing it.
And I watched him last night, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think he's had many issues with the game, but in story number two, Returnal had a patch. It was 1.3.3 that came out recently. But the problem with 1.3.3 was it caused a critical save file error. So it was taken down. And then just recently, patch 1.3.4 addressed that issue, which is now live. And it promised to fix the save-related issue. People playing the game. I mean, they would have this critical save file error and boom, it's like, you know, everything lost. So, I mean, but what I want to talk about here is, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before, but I want to talk about this more. I mean, buying a game at $70, I mean, you expect, if you're going to pay $70 for a game at on day one, you expect it to be, I mean, clean as hell and, and smooth and be able to go from start to finish without any hiccups. But I mean, I mean, what do you guys think of this? I mean, does this basically, you know, make your feelings even stronger for the fact that a $70 price point on a new game, you know, this is kind of like a red flag in a sense that, you know, these games are coming out. Most games coming out. 90% of games that come out now, they're not ready. I mean, we could talk about Cyberpunk all day, but I mean, a lot of these games are just not ready. But people, you know, PlayStation and all the others, they're talking about how, well, we have to pay the developers and everything else. And, you know, it's
which
like
is a lie,
which is a lie. And so, this $70 price point, people are still paying it. I mean, I don't know.
I want to see the numbers for these because I don't think people are paying for it. I think there's a surprising amount of people who are going $70. Fuck that. I'm going to see the numbers. I want to see the comparison between Returnal and Resi 8. I mean, it's not quite a fair comparison because Resi 8 is way bigger than Returnal, but Resi 8 is also £50, which is it's anything between £15 and £20 less than Returnal is.
Yeah.
And you're right. If I'm paying you £70 for a game, I want that fucking thing 100% on the day. You can't say we need more money and then give us shit.
You can't
do that. You can't do that. If you want my £70, I want a frigging game that's working at the box 100%. It's funny, I said this last night about Denture to Go, unsurprisingly. Denture to Go came out in December.
Mm-hmm.
It had no patches.
Hmm.
No. It came out on the Switch in March. It had no patches. Yeah. They got it right. Mm-hmm. Then they sold the fucking thing.
Yeah.
That's like almost unheard of now.
Isn't it? I was on my stream and I was flabbergasted. You can't get your head around that. When's the last time that happened to you?
I honestly can't think.
Can't remember.
When you had the Sega Dreamcast, right?
Every game, pretty much every game I've bought in the modern, there's always the day one patch.
Yep.
And it's like, in some cases, the day one patch is insane. The file size they want.
Yep.
Just a patch, but it's like,
yeah, there was news this week about the Mass Effect Legendary Edition that's coming out, and
for that as well.
Yeah, and I just want to make quick plug on my YouTube channel, Expat 2020 Gaming. I put out a video on that. Go check that out. But the file size for Mass Effect Legendary Edition, that when it comes out day one, the patch, the file size patch is bigger than the original games put together. It's amazing. Yeah. You know, like 12 gig, you know, and the original Mass Effect game was like, what, 9 or something like that?
So basically what's on the disc is an installer.
Yeah.
So on that Blu-ray disc, which contains, what, 25 gigs, on that Blu-ray disc, there's probably about 500 meg of actual friggin' software on it. And that just says, oh, load a pretty screen, play some music while we download from this location. Brilliant. Which also means that, again, being a retro collector, having the physical copy of that game won't mean jack shit once they turn the servers off in 20, 30 years' time. So you can have your pretty disc, and you put it in your PS5, and you go, brilliant, I'll play it. And it's like, well, no, we can't play. There's nothing to play because we can't download the entire game off. Oh, bonkers. Crackers.
But just this $70 price point. And what really irks me...
You can't do it.
Yeah. But the people that are doing it, though... And I talked about this a little bit last week. It's that addiction of the fear of missing out, and you gotta buy it day one because you gotta play it on. Sorry, Burly man, I'm not ripping on you, but I'm ripping on some streamers out there. They're gonna play it day one because they fear missing out. They think they're gonna get all of these, you know, new, you know, followers and new viewers and stuff like that. But that's $70 that's making these companies say, hey, these guys are going to buy it day one. So it's justifying us to put that $70 price point down on a game.
Oh, I agree with you. Because, like, I have known some streamer buddies. I'm not saying names or anything.
Yeah.
But I know some, and I will do that on some games. I'll buy day one. Because
and Dan and I, we've called them, you know, like by their new nicknames here on this podcast. They're beta testers.
And
they're beta testers.
You're absolutely right on that. Like, we already mentioned the dead horse, but let's just mention it again. Cyberpunk should be a massive wake up call for a lot of people that you cannot just go buy off a name.
Yeah.
Be like, thinking, oh, CDPR, they've done something. They've done good stuff. Let's just blindly trust them and give them my money. No, do not do that. There's a lot of games that I would love to just blindly trust, but I know I've been burnt before. And it's like, you know what? Let everyone else beta test. Once I know it's good and I can see stuff and watch stuff that isn't the paid reviewers that are going to sell me anything.
Yeah.
Then I'll consider looking, okay, maybe I will pick this up, but is this worth full price?
No, so I hate to break it to anyone, but in today's climate, none of the games that come out are worth the price tags.
Yeah.
Not a friggin' one. They're fucking so generic, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, Bradley's absolutely right. It's messed up. But so we talked a bit about this before the show, Bradley, like how a game for you is like $100 Canadian, right? Or it can be, right?
Yeah. With the new prices,
one, that hurts my brain, $100. It sounds like a number that's just unworkable. And then you get it and it doesn't fucking work. Like, there's been rumblings in the UK for a long time about how this is actually deceptive and kind of illegal.
Yeah.
Because you've advertised this game as this is a game you can play, you download, you pay your money, you put it in a machine, it works. And for years, consumer law in the UK has been like, is this allowed? Like, again, the famous thing about, like, imagine if you bought a car and they're like, we'll put brakes in later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Other industries get watched on. Like, if you try and sell shit and it's not the thing you advertise, you get the book thrown at you. You get taken to court, you get fines, you get penalized, blah, blah, your business in jeopardy, blah, blah. For some reason, the video game industry gets a free pass on this.
Yeah.
You can sell whatever the fuck you want, call it whatever you want, charge whatever you want, and then go, don't worry about it. We'll finish it someday. That's the only industry on the planet that can somehow still get away with it. And unless there's legal reform, which, again, there's rumbling in the UK that maybe that's a thing going forward, because you can't sell half an item. You just can't. And if there's like, unless there's like a legal precedent to stop doing that, they will never stop doing it. It's never going to go away now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
I said it before. I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, sorry for interrupting, but look at how long it's starting to slowly people are countries all over the world are being like, are loot boxes kind of okay? No, not really. Like in some countries, they're starting to take some of it, like EA and some of these other companies to task of being like, no, you guys can't sell these loot boxes. These are gambling. You're advertising to kids and shit. No.
Yes, I think it's Belgium that's already put the kibosh on that already. Instantly said, no, you can't do that anymore. The UK is still looking into it. I don't know what the latest on that is, but there has been movement in that over here about how, because it is pure fucking evil. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Canada's got them in court as well.
Oh, good.
Hopefully it's going to be the result we all want.
Evil scheming pieces of shit. Because like you go back and like look at the, you know, like on the Mega Drive, the original FIFA, and you think like, it's such a good attempt at making a good soccer game, football game. You know, they really went for it, and it's like it's a really cute thing. And you look at it now, and you're like, how the hell did you get here? Like you went from like a really, you know, an honest, heartfelt attempt to recreate football in a video game, and it did a really good job. Don't get me wrong, the first FIFA is really, really good. FIFA on the Mega Drive is amazing. And you just think, how did you become this insidious, evil piece of shit over the 25 years or so? It's hideous. Yeah, man, that needs to go away. But back to the point, yeah, 70 quid. I want a bloody working game for 70 quid.
That's right.
It's inexcusable. You can't say we need more money and then keep producing the same shit. And again, I just wait till it's ready. No one's holding you at gunpoint saying, well, except the arsehole stock investors and the arsehole management who just want their cut. You know, the talentless fucks in the middle who don't do anything but just have their hand out constantly.
Yeah. And by the time it's ready, it'll be $30.
That too. Yeah. But like, just take the fucking 6 months. Yeah. No one's going, I want Returnal now. Returnal has to happen now. Fuck off. Just wait 6 months and release the game finished.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Cyberpunk, that couldn't happen. Because Cyberpunk, let's not kid ourselves, that's another 2 years away from being finished. Let's not even pretend. Yeah. Like
Two years, you're generous.
It's true, though. I mean, yeah, you know, you've played the damn thing. We are years away from a finished copy of Cyberpunk.
I don't think that game's going to get finished the way that...
I'm with you.
Promised, because people... Never have be left, finished. Some people have left CDPR.
Yeah.
I said it before, that company's going... Yeah, it's whether it's going to be a year from now, 6 months, but don't kid yourself that Witcher 4, because I know people that have told me, they're like, oh, Witcher 4 is going to be amazing. I'm like, what drugs are you on?
Yeah.
Because I mean,
most of them have left now, yeah. And the guy, the director on the Witcher has left because he was a bit of an abusive asshole, apparently. So,
yeah.
Harsh times.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to story number three. So Nintendo has a big game coming right before E3. Actually, it's going to be launching on June 11th. And so this big Switch title is aimed at budding game designers. Mm. So the game is called Game Builder Garage. So it's going to let you build your own Switch games, basically. So let me go ahead and give you some of the rundown to this. So let me go ahead and yes, if my computer doesn't bomb out on me here, here we go. So Game Builder Garage allows you to program your own games, everything from creating the music to the logic and programming behind it. The software looks very much like a Labo game, both in the game creation and with the characters. So the Noden are new to Game Builder Garage, and they're what will help you stick your game together. So Noden are creatures with big personalities that are used to help build your games from the ground up. There are dozens of Noden in Game Builder Garage, each with a unique function. You can learn how to build games just by connecting them in various ways. For example, you can create and move a human-like character with an analog stick just by connecting stick Noden with person Noden. Thus, you will get to learn the basics of game programming in a fun and intuitive way. So, yeah, what do you guys think of this? Mario, Super Mario Maker comes to mind when I think of this. Is this something you guys might be interested in picking up? And do you think this could become one of the best game creation tools since Super Mario Maker? What do you think? Burley, let's start with you on this one. What do you think?
I was shocked to see this and I mean it in a good way. I am very excited for this. I don't know if anyone here has played Dreams on the PlayStation.
That's what I was thinking. Dreams
is a lot of fun. Like I used to stream Dreams. I couldn't be arsed to make shit, but just play other people's creations. I don't know how many hours of just entertainment, and you talk with people that had made, like, that was the benefits of streaming that game, is talking with people and being like, I was inspired by this and that. And, you know, you're getting people to check out their stuff and you're having a blast and talking with people. Mm-hmm. This I'm very, very excited for, like being the price point of $30. It's like, okay, Nintendo's being smart on price, because they know you put it at a low price like this, it's just going to sell. And you're going to teaching kids real life skills, because this will get sold to a lot of kids.
Yep.
All for that. And making your own games. Nice. Nintendo's not going to give us, Nintendo's not going to give us some of the games we want. So for $30, we can just spend and get what we want. Mm. Great. There's one major negative. I don't know if any of you have looked into this. How you're going to be able to search and play other people's games. It's by the same system of Mario Maker. You got to put in the 9-digit code crap.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to wait a month or two, probably after the game comes out, to wait till one of these websites come out, so that way I can find a search engine. Just to search through this, because I'm not going to want to go refresh the new section all the time and just slowly do it. Nintendo, make a goddamn search engine with a search bar and let me search for titles or genres. Like, come on, that's not that hard to do. You shouldn't have to let a whole third party to do that.
Yeah.
Dan, what do you think of this?
I'm very interested in this, because one of the things I do at the Center for Computer History is I teach kids like the elements of like making games, and we do workshops on how to make your own games, and coding and stuff. So this is actually very interesting to me. When I was looking at the trailer now, I saw elements of Unity in here. There's bits of the Scratch programming language going on. It's all presented in a nice, colorful way. I think this is a genuinely an educational tool. I think this is very, very interesting. Something that we at the CCH will be having a good look at. I'm very excited for this. And it's only in the UK. So normally we have a straight conversion. So if it's $30 to £30, it's only 27. That's £27 for Game Builder Garage. It'll be interesting to see what the limitations are, obviously. Mm-hmm. But no, this is something I am now very interested in. Something we can work with and learn a lot from, I think. Yeah, anything like this is brilliant with me. Unity now it's tricky. Don't get me wrong, but I genuinely believe that Unity is at a place where anyone can make a game now. Like, I've done a few courses, I've learned a few things about Unity, and the things that strike me is anyone can do this now. It keeps getting refined and simplified. Not simplified. Simplified is maybe a bit, sounds like it's easy or dumbing down, but the process of making a game in Unity or any or Unity or Godot or I've not tried Unreal, but I'm sure it's a similar sort of thing. They make it as accessible as possible. Yeah. So I think that this is as a stepping stone, so a young learner can play these games and work out the basis of logic and input outputs and reactions and variables and all these other things, and then go on to these other languages. I think this is brilliant. I think it's an excellent move. I think it's a really positive thing.
It's gonna sell. It's gonna sell a ton in Japan. It's gonna be big out here.
Everywhere. It's gonna be mental. Yeah. And that price point is entirely reasonable.
Yep.
Yeah. 27 quid for what you can tell your parents is an educational thing. Great. Sign me up. This is a good thing. I think. Remains to be seen, but here I'm positive about it.
And I think this is going to be part of Nintendo's presentation at E3.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
So they'll have recreated like classic. They'll be like a little Zelda show off and a little Star Wing show or something. I'm sure they'll have like classic. They will have. We won't have when they release the game. They've none of that stuff in the game. But they'll have. Oh, look, this. We made a game that looks like Zelda. We made a game that looks like blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting stuff.
Hey, all those games you wanted us to make. Here we go. We made five little minute games here that you can only play in a code garage.
Yeah.
And I then imagine. And then the sales will go from whatever a million pre-orders to 7 million within a week.
No, I'm excited for this. This sounds very, very good indeed. And I'm looking forward to getting involved with this at some stage. And it's only a month away. So that's great.
June 11th. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to our topic of the show. So, guys, this last week was Star Wars week, and a lot of people on streams were playing Star Wars games. I was playing Star Wars Squadrons. That was pretty fun. It was cool to see, the pilot from the original series, Wedge Antilles. Yeah. He's actually Star Wars Squadrons. So, yeah, that was fun to play. So, today we want to talk a little bit about Star Wars games. Discussion of our favorite Star Wars titles, some titles that you think might be underrated or overrated, why they are special to us. For me, I mean, I go all the way back to the Atari 2600, basically. So way, way back. So like in 1983... Of course, there was Star Wars Jedi Arena, so I loved playing that on the 2600. And then, of course, back during the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 era, I loved playing the Force Unleashed series. Those were pretty cool games. And recently, of course, and what's also been, a lot of people out there have been clamoring for a sequel on this one, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. That was a really good one. I really enjoyed the story on that. And that's something that I think we're definitely going to be getting a sequel to.
It's already been announced, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's announced. It's in development.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fun parts of the game, a little bit of Titanfall in it, running around, just the story in itself was really good as well. So and of course the Lego games, the Lego Star Wars Force Awakens, was a pretty cool game as well. And I'm really looking forward to the Skywalker saga whenever that comes out. It comes out. Hopefully within the next couple of months. Hopefully so. Anyway,
wait till next Christmas.
Exactly. Christmas would be a perfect time for that. But anyway, what about you guys? What are some memorable Star Wars titles for you guys? And maybe some games that were overrated or maybe underrated in your opinion? What do you guys think? Dan, let's start with you on this one.
Growing up, I was a huge Star Wars fan, so I played pretty much everything that there was. Probably my most favorite, it's most beloved Star Wars game might be Rogue Squadron on the N64 or TIE Fighter on the PC. Anything space combat, I freaking love. I put so many hours into TIE Fighter on the PC when I was a kid. Really happy memories just being sat, in front of a big gray big beige box, and a massive CRT monitor, you know, joystick and keyboard commands, and just bazzing around in a TIE fighter trying to take down the Alliance ships. Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing game. I didn't enjoy the Unleashed series.
Yeah.
I played the first Force Unleashed. You know, it's a bit, I think I got it for free or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was all right. It's a bit generic platformer. Not platform, but action adventure game.
Yeah.
They did a much better job on Fallen Order, which was Fallen Order was a very, very good game.
Yeah.
Getting a PS5 upgrade soon. Woo.
Yeah.
I think Dark Forces is underrated. The one back in, that was 95. That's like first person Doom clone. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought it was using the Doom engine, and it didn't. It used its own proprietary engine called the Jedi game engine. Mm-hmm. It has a Jedi game engine in it. And it was like Doom, but you could look up and down. And I enjoyed that. And the sequels were okay too. I think the sequels are out on the Switch. Jedi Knight 2 and Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Academy are both out on the Switch now in glorious HD. But and things like Rebel Alliance. Not Rebel Alliance. Yeah, Rebel Alliance. There's so many. Rebel Assault. That's the one. Christ.
Knights of the Old Republic. Games. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get into it. But it's getting a re-release, but it's not getting a re-release. It's getting a remaster. They're going to faff around with all the controls and the progression and stuff. So that's whatever. But And if you are interested in these games, go over to GOG.com, GOG.com, and get them all on your PC. And they're all pennies, and they all work perfectly. So you can go play Dark Forces for pennies. You can go play TIE Fighter for pennies, X-Wing, Rebel Assault. All these games are available on GOG.com for absolute pittance. And they are great.
Cool.
So there.
Burley, how about you?
They'll also be on the Switch in about 6 months because the Switch is the port machine.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'd love for the original Dark Forces to be on Switch.
Oh, anyway, same. As you stated, Dark Forces, that was going to be mine. One of the ones I brought up. I remember playing that as a kid. And always getting, because I think like the last level is you're walking around the Death Star and you can encounter Vader. Mm-hmm. And he just blocks every shot you do, so you encounter him. Yeah. From what I remember, you're fucked. but one of the ones I played a lot of was the original Star Wars Battlefront 2 on the PS2 Xbox.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, I played that. I played that a ton. I remember doing the whole campaign, which goes from Episode 1 through all the way through Episode 6. And then it had like the galactic conquest mode, which took hours and stuff. It was just great. I've not played any of the Force Unleashed. I've always been told I should play the first one, but avoid the second one like the plague. And I did play a little bit of X-Wing versus TIE Fighter back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But
I never played that one. Yeah, sorry, go on.
It's good. I think you'd enjoy that. Jedi Fallen Order. I picked that up when the year it came out because they had the big blowout at the end of the year where it was like 45% or 50% off. So it was like, okay, I'll try this out. And it was a great game. I'm sad that they're making a sequel because it's most likely they're just going to screw that up because it's still tied to EA. So let's not kid ourselves. Okay. They sold that game sold well. Hey, you're going to buy, you like your different lightsaber customizations and colors?
Yeah, sell those. Yeah.
Oh fuck. We could sell those. And look at how much loot boxes the Battlefront 2 that came out a few years ago sold.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they will sell a shit ton because the Star Wars fan, for the most part, will buy it.
It all depends on where the story goes, I think, as well. I mean, like if they throw in like an Ahsoka or something or some character like that could be appealing. A character that's like in the canon that hasn't been in any of the video games. We shall see, but
Yeah. Well, I'm shocked we don't have a Mandalorian game with how big that show
there
is.
There are rumblings. There are rumblings right now that there are Disney Plus and you know, Disney is actually working on a game that's based on the Mandalorian series. So, but that's just a rumor, but hopefully that comes true. We'll see. But
it seems a bit late. Do you remember back in the good old days where like they happened at the same time? Because of course back then games didn't take 5 years to make. Yeah. Like you won't have that anymore. You won't have like, you know, games of the TV series or games of the movie. It's just, it's a shame.
Well, maybe it was because they had to wait to see if the Mandalorian was actually going to be really successful.
Yeah, or not. I suppose.
And then boom. Yeah. Just took off.
I suppose. Yeah. Could be.
All right. Okay. So which now leads into Dan, your retro topic of the week. So every week, well, almost every week, Dan comes out with a retro topic from the world of retro gaming. So Dan, what do you have for us this week, man?
So yeah, one of the things that you touched on briefly there. So anyone, what's the first Star Wars game that ever came out? Quick quiz. What's the first ever Star Wars game?
The first ever Star Wars game that came out.
Was it the one on the Commodore 64?
Nope, bit before that.
Before that, okay.
Here's a hint. We've already mentioned it on this podcast.
Furley?
the one expat mentioned on the... on the 2600?
Hey, that's exactly right.
That's right. Boop. 1983,
That is the first one. Yeah, that even predates the amazing arcade game. The Vector Graphics 3D arcade game came out after that.
I remember playing that, so man.
Don't you? I remember sitting in it and like you hear like friggin' use the force. And you're like, the game talked to me, I'm in an X-Wing. Yeah, that was so good. Anyway. so before that, Parker Brothers brought out Empire. Empire Strikes Back came out on the 2600 and the Intellivision. It came out on the 2600 first. That was in 1982, which puts it a year before the Intellivision and the arcade game, as we've mentioned before. So Parker Brothers, as you know, they started making board games and stuff, then went on to make electronic games, and then the Atari craze happened, and then they wanted to get in on that. So they started a division to make games for the 2600 and other machines. So this poor guy called Rex Bradford rocks up to Parker Brothers, fresh from college, as you guys call it. And they're like, hey, come to our electronic games division. So he goes there and they're like, hey, actually, here's an Atari 2600. Work out how it works and how to code for it. And he does that. And they go, okay, we want to make a Monopoly game. So he starts making a Monopoly game. And then they go, oh, no, wait. Because we're Parker Brothers and we're pretty, pretty rich at this point, we've bought the license for Star Wars. Can you make a game about Empire Strikes Back? And like he's like, oh my god, it's like one of the first like games I've ever made. So inexplicably, he does it and he pulls off this fairly decent game. Now, if you haven't played it or you don't know about it, the Empire Strikes Back on the 2600 and the Intellivision, it's like it's a side-on horizontal shooter kind of. You're in control of a little snow speeder. You're on Hoth, so it mimics the very start of the film.
Yeah,
and you bomb left and right, shooting down the AT-AT walkers, the giant walking tanks. From the movie, and it takes a lot of winks from Defender, which came out around this time.
Yeah,
and so you go along and you shoot these 80-80s until they explode, and then you go along and find another one, and you keep doing that until you die.
Yeah.
It takes a nod from the first film. Takes a nod from A New Hope in the fact there's little exhaust port, little reactor ports that open up on the AT-AT, so you can get a quick kill if you can hit those with your laser beams. It's very cool. At the time, it was met with both good and bad. They liked it, and some people freaking hated it.
Yeah.
According to the Wikipedia page, Harlan Ellison, the famed sci-fi author, freaking hated it. But on the whole, it was pretty good, and it isn't a bad game. I don't know if it holds up now, but it's certainly playable as a little arcade-esque experience. I mean, it's not a million miles away from Defender.
Yeah, played it
even the.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Dan. I was just going to say, the Intellivision was my second console after the 2600, sure. And I played that. Mm. It was great.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, obviously at the time you'd have been losing your mind.
Yeah.
I was.
You know,
yeah, good. At the time it had like near enough sound effects, and it played the theme from Star Wars or an attempt at it, the Force theme.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, it's a great thing. I think everyone, you can play it online right now. You can go into go to Google Chrome or Firefox, whatever, and just type in Empire Strikes Back Atari, play online, and there's a browser-based version where you can emulate it super, super easily. But if you want to go back and see where the whole Star Wars game craze started, you're right. Next game that came up was what's that, Jedi Academy, which is one with the two lightsabers flying around. What was this next game? You mentioned it before.
You're talking about what I was talking about with Jedi Arena, right?
That's it, Arena. Yeah. Thank you, Jedi Arena.
Yeah.
Arena. Jedi Arena.
Yeah, Jedi Arena, that's right, man. The Arena.
Yeah, yeah. That was a follow-up game, which, yeah. I don't know. Did you enjoy that? Even at the time, we were like, oh my God, this is...
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was in elementary school, yeah. So
okay, well,
yeah, like you were saying earlier, it blew my mind when it came out. But I mean, today, obviously,
really?
You know, I would be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because anything that came out in a video game format for Star Wars back in those days, I mean, it was amazing, so...
Right. Oh, yeah, so, yeah, once you've finished playing Fallen Order or finished playing Squadrons, hop onto your 2600 or Intellivision and have a crack at The Empire Strikes Back. It's good. My very first Star Wars game that wasn't in an arcade would have been on the Amstrad CPC, the microcomputer.
Droids?
And the... No, it would have been... It might have been Return of the Jedi, actually. Because during the crash in the States, in the UK, we didn't care because we had a little microcomputer. So we had loads of Star Wars games coming out. We had more Star Wars games coming out. Yeah. So every microcomputer had a copy of Empire, of its own idiosyncratic version of Empire and Jedi. So, yeah. And some of them were the arcade ports of Jedi. Some of them were like original games based on Jedi. But, yeah. There's loads of these undiscovered Star Wars games. There's probably hundreds of Star Wars games available out there.
Yeah.
And, it's had a good... It's got, on the whole, a pretty good legacy. I'm not sure there are many turkeys. I mean, I can't think of any particularly... Well, I'm sure I kind of have tried hard enough, but any really bad Star Wars games? Can you think of any generally bad ones? Like, people cuss Shadows of the Empire on the N64. Mm. I'll defend that game till my dying breath. I love that game. I think it's brilliant. It's a game where you can fly a snow speeder. You run around in third person. You can fly what the hell's this ship called? Anyway, you can fly a spaceship. It's amazing. I love that game. Can you think of a bad Star Wars game?
Burley, how about you?
No, not off the top of my head, because every one that I have played, like I played a lot of the demos for the PS1 games back in the day, and they were all fun.
Yeah.
You can't say that about some of the movies.
Oh, God, I just remembered. We were talking about this at work yesterday. We're setting up, because we're still under lockdown now and you can't touch anything, we were setting up a Kinect so people can play Kinect without touching any, play Kinect games. And we were talking about Star Wars Kinect, Kinect Star Wars. Mm. That's the worst Star Wars game known to man. Mm. Yeah, that's complete dog shit.
Come on, you don't want to dance like the Emperor?
It's so cringeworthy, isn't it? That... I mean, I don't know how LucasArts was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I don't know how anyone in control of the license went, yeah, we'll have that. Because it makes every aspect of Star Wars look like complete shit.
At that point, they just saw Dalit and said, okay, we're going to get a check for how much?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because that was in 20... Sorry, go on.
Fuck. We're going to get a check for how much? Ah, fuck it. We've already destroyed this franchise enough. Let's just milk it more.
That's probably part of it. Yeah. And like that was the same year that they announced the sale to Disney.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, fuck it. We'll release this dog shit game. It doesn't matter because it's not our problem anymore. And then the rights go straight to Disney and they're like, all right, you can pick
Then we up get the now. Disney payout. So we win either way.
Yeah. Well, and then I think this is getting away from the retro topic, Dan. Sorry. But I mean,
that's right, I don't care.
Like, for example, what Burley was talking about with EA having the licenses to Star Wars.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah.
One of the overrated games, unfortunately, because of the loot boxes and everything, the drama with that, with the Battlefront games, Star Wars Battlefront and then into Battlefront 2. I think that was a major problem when the game's released.
It's coming to an end, isn't it? The EA Star Wars exclusivity.
Yeah,
it was only a limited thing, and I think earlier this year someone announced it's gonna.
They still have it, but I think it's like for maybe one more year or something like that. But
they have it, but now other people can start development. Right. Right. But I think it's that they can't release till 2022 or maybe 2023.
Right.
I'm curious to see what we'll get out of it now that it's no longer EA holds the rights. So let's see. I mean, are we going to get some fresh ideas or are we just going to get the same old?
Could be that Mandalorian game. Could be. Or Amy Hennig's game. That somebody took over. We'll see.
What was that? Star Wars 1313?
Yeah. Cars yeah. 1313. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever they're going to make it now. We'll see. But
I think they're still working together, but they're not exclusive, are they? So other people are going to start making a Star Wars game, which is friggin' awesome. But let's not forget, in this entire time, they've had it. So, what, almost, 9 years now. What is it?
Yeah.
2013. Right. So 2013, they got the deal. So they've had it for 8 years.
Three games. Like three games, basically.
They've had like three good games since they've announced this. In there, because like everything else has been shit. Everything else they've done has been shit. The only good thing that's come out of this is Fallen Order and Squadrons, right?
Yep. Yep.
Anything else? Battlefronts 1 and 2 have been average at best, if not a bit shit.
Four games altogether, yeah. So
Battlefront 2, like I have played the new one when Sony gave it away from PS Plus, and because they dialed back, they had to get rid of the loot box and shit. The story on it's not bad. It's not bad, and the multiplayer was fun, but it was just like, if they wouldn't have done the whole loot box controversy, it would have been a good game, but because even when I played it, you could still feel that, like, hey, there's the loot box controversy. So it still haunts that game. Cause I have people that I know that play it all the time and we're like, come on. It's good. I'm like, I'm good.
But fundamentally, I mean, they squandered the license. They squandered it.
Yeah.
They absolutely screwed the pooch.
Yeah.
What a waste, because it would have cost them a lot of money to secure that license, that exclusivity. Yeah. And they spaffed it away on two, you know, fun as they are, but they're generic as fuck. You could reskin Battlefront and none would bat an eye. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't notice.
Well,
and Battlefront 1 didn't even have a campaign. I mean, Battlefront 2 had a minimal like 2 to 3 hour campaign.
Which I still want to play. I have to admit.
The campaign on that's good. It's like 4, maybe. I think it's 4 hours because you do like
something like that.
You do a couple levels as bad and then a couple levels as the good guys.
Right.
Like the story's not bad on that. It was just.
Yeah.
It's nothing like, oh my God, this was a great campaign. I want to go back to it. It's like, yeah, this was fine to get me used to the controls of the game.
Yeah, I thought the campaign in Fallen Order was much better, obviously.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's designed to be. Yeah. But, like, don't forget the campaign on Squadrons is only about 2 hours long. I finished it in two sittings, you know. Yeah. So, but still, it was a good 2 hours. I enjoyed it immensely. But, they wasted this license, and it's going to haunt them forever.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I think that once other people start making actually good games, like Ubisoft, you know, fingers crossed you don't do a friggin' Far Cry, but in Star Wars world.
That's what they're gonna do. They
can't. They can't keep doing it. They've been called out on it so many times. Like, I want to see what the next Far Cry is gonna be like before I get interested about Star. When Far Cry 6 or whatever it is comes out, we'll know that. Ah, shit! They haven't learned a single bloody thing.
You say they can't, but the sales numbers don't lie, and people will buy it.
I suppose. But basically, what the sales?
I want to be wrong. But let's not kid ourselves. It's the circle that keeps repeating.
Yeah,
and we're like, why?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that was our retro topic of the week, talking about older Star Wars titles. So thank you for that, Dan. Yeah, so that was cool.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I remember when I was like in junior high school going to the arcades and just playing the Star Wars games. I was playing the hell out of those games. And
it's
even
immense.
Here in Japan, I mean, you and I go into the shopping malls and, you know, having game centers there, and they'd have a Star Wars game there.
Oh yeah, that's brilliant. The most recent sit down one is freaking phenomenal.
Yeah,
it makes you a bit seasick. You got to play it a couple times to get used to it. But oh,
it's awesome. That's though, a good man. Game. Yeah,
man alive. I miss the Lala Square. Used to have a little game center in it for a while. And it had the proper sit in Ridge Racer cabinets.
Yeah, yeah.
And like when I met you on a Saturday morning for a coffee or whatever, I used to go sneak in there and have a couple of games before I met you. It was freaking brilliant.
Yeah, good stuff, man.
God damn it.
Yeah. Tomorrow I might go check over there. Yeah. Might go downstairs and see if it's still there.
Buy me that Densha to Go plug-in game for the... just buy it for me. I need it for my collection.
Okay.
It's really good, apparently. It's a plug-and-play. You just plug it into power supply and you plug it into your TV.
Oh.
And it plays a PS2 version of Densha to Go.
Wow.
All in the unit. Amazing.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
Amazing. But it is bloody... It's about 100 and something quid over it. About 110 quid it works out, which is a lot of money for, you know, that. But then Densha to Go is expensive. Anyway, sorry, no more Densha to Go talk. It's my current obsession. I can't stop thinking about Densha to Go.
Okay. So anyway, thanks, Dan, for the retro topic this week. And next up on the show, our new and upcoming video game releases via Metacritic for the week of May 10th through the 16th. There are four games on the list. And we start with Famicom Detective Club. So I don't know if you've heard about Famicom Detective Club. There's two games on the list titled Famicom Detective Club. The first one is the subheading is The Girl Who Stands Behind. So it comes out on May 14th for the Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
Yeah.
So is that another visual novel?
Visual novel. So interrogate suspects and hunt for clues to piece together chilling conundrums playing in high school in Japan. Suspense and a little bit of horror ensues as you try to free students from their nightmare. Play at home, on the go, or in your favorite reading nook, only on the Nintendo Switch system. So, yeah.
It looks very nice, to be fair. How much is it? How much do I want for it?
Dan doesn't remember this because I streamed this live when they announced this, and then you were there because
it's 50 quid.
Yep, I was waiting for that reaction because I remember when they announced the price. All I remember is Dan puts the angry face in the chat and then says, "Hard pass."
Sorry, for a series of still images. With fucking text on the bottom. They want £50. 50 for still images with text on them. Fuck me. I'm in the wrong job. I'm going to start making visual novels. This is brilliant. What there a scam.
Buy your game builder and start.
You don't even need that. You can just friggin' make a bloody PowerPoint slideshow. Like, 50 quid.
Okay, so
that is mental. Sorry.
So the next one, let me get to the next one here. So
sorry,
Detective Club, The Missing Heir. So it comes out on the same day on May 14th. Another visual novel. So solve a murder mystery surrounding a wealthy Japanese family. Hunt for clues, talk to suspects, and explore the Japanese countryside after tragedy strikes the wealthy Ayashiro family. Filled with suspense, this tale follows an amnesia-stricken detective trying to unravel his own past amidst the horrors of a harrowing murder investigation. Play at home, on the go, or in your favorite reading nook, only on the Nintendo Switch system. Comes out on May 14th.
Bonkers.
Yeah. Okay, next up on the list, Mass Effect Legendary Edition.
Yeah.
Comes out on May 14th. And go check out that video that I made on Expat 2020 Gaming on my YouTube channel. So it comes out on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. So no word yet on next-gen versions. So
55 quid.
Comes out on May 14th.
10 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know what's gone wrong with the world. This is insanity.
Yeah.
This is why I traded in games to pick this up.
Yeah.
So Mass Effect Legendary Edition will include single player base content and DLC from Mass Effect, Mass Effect 2, and Mass Effect 3, plus promo weapons, armors, and packs, all remastered and optimized for the 4K Ultra HD. It will be available in spring, of course, coming up next week for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC, with forward compatibility and targeted enhancements on Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 when it does arrive there. So, yeah, comes out on the 14th. So, yeah. Last up on the list, Subnautica Below Zero. So this is the expansion for Subnautica. Dan, you played Subnautica.
I have. Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah. Burley, have you played Subnautica yet?
I have not, but I've watched quite a few people stream it. I think I have it because I gave it away from one of the PS Plus months.
Yeah.
I do mean to try. It's just in one of those, I got to sit and go through my backlog and play it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's free on Play at Home still, I think. I think that's still going. That initiative's still happening. So you can get down it for free on the PS, yeah.
Yep. So it Below Zero comes out on May 14th for the PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, PC, and the Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
So Nintendo Switch on that one. Interesting. Below Zero is an underwater adventure game set on an alien ocean world. It is a new chapter in the Subnautica universe and developed by Unknown Worlds. Return to planet 4546B. Dive into a freezing underwater adventure. Mm. So, yes, comes out on the 14th. So those are our four games. So Famicom Detective Club, The Girl Who Stands Behind, and The Missing Heir, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and Subnautica Below Zero. What's your guys' pick for this week?
Eesh.
Definitely the visual novel pack. You know, it's just going to I'm going to buy it just to teach me so I can quickly learn how to rip this off. NTI to draw all my art for me. I'll make us a bullshit story that'll take me a half hour. Sell it for $30 a piece.
And you'll have to read it to us on a future post show, man.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah.
Burley comes to pitch his game, make a cool mill, and then retire.
Yeah. Well, there's a few games like this. If you look in the Switch store, there are a few just visual novels, and for some reason they're like 30, 40, 50 pounds. I'm like, are you just milking weeaboos? Are you just milking, you know, kids who can't get over Japan and like the whole kawaii thing? And like,
yeah.
Like, what the who generally I want to know who's the target audience, because their target audience for this doesn't have 50 quid to spunk away on a series of still images with text on them.
There are people that spend that money. Trust me, I've dealt with all kinds of people. I'm not saying any negative, but people will spend. It's the same people that will same kind of thing that people will still spend full price on a sports game.
Mind you, I'd have spent like 80 quid on a frigging train game.
Yeah.
And then 50 quid on another train game. But I'm down about 120 quid on train games right now.
At least with your train games, you're getting like fancy controllers and stuff on some of them.
And they work. And they're complete. So
No patches. I would laugh. I guarantee there's some patches for these because they got to change some of the things just to get it on the Nintendo. But
in all honesty, go ahead, Burley. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, in all honesty, my pick's the Mass Effect Collection.
Okay,
I've never experienced 2 and 3. I played the first one, but I played it at a wrong time of my life. And I liked Andromeda, which I know some people here may not like me saying. But I'd love to try 2 and 3. So pick up the collection, I figured.
Yeah,
try that.
My pick's probably Below Zero, because I played Subnautica too, Dan. It's been a while, but I played it on Xbox, and seems pretty interesting. I might give it a try. I've played the 3 Mass Effect games already. I mean, I don't know, just visual enhancements and everything else. Like I was saying in my YouTube video, it's like, if you've never played these games before, it would be worth picking up. But I mean, you know, for someone who's played the series before, you might want to wait for a price drop on this thing. So,
I mean, wait till, the Black Friday sales. This will be 30 quid, 25 quid. But wait for Black Friday, pick up then.
Or 6 months to 8 months from now, if you're an Xbox user, it'll be on Game Pass.
Or that.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It'll.
Yeah.
See it happening.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, they're amazing. They're just not, they're not 55 quid worth of amazing. I don't know what that, I don't know. Well, just pure greed, that price point. It should be 30 for, you know, for remakes. But yeah.
Okay.
And don't forget that series has already made its money. It's paid for itself 100 times over. They could sell us at 30 quid and still make a profit.
Yep.
But it's just, why bother when you charge 55? Yeah, exactly.
But EA needs more yachts, Dan.
They do. They yachts. Need all the money. Some of the money isn't enough. Most of the money isn't enough. They need all of the money, all of it, all the time.
Yeah.
What a shitty world we live in.
All right. So before we conclude the episode, I want to let everyone know where you can find me on social media. You can find my website for gaming content at expat2020.live and all my other social media links to Twitter, Instagram, my Discord server, the podcast website, as well as my YouTube channels at Linktree, that's linktr.ee/expat2020. I'm also a live streamer and a Twitch affiliate on twitch.tv/expat2020, and I do occasional gaming and special event live streams, as well as a supplement to the podcast called The Arena, a multi-platform gaming news week in review live stream, which streams generally on Fridays. So that does it for me. Burley, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/burlymangaming. You can also find me on Twitter at burlymangaming. And soon enough, my at something studios to make visual novels to retire.
At fleecingweeaboos.com.
Yes, and you can also find my VP of there, Dan.
Yeah, good, nice.
All right.
I'll be fleecing those dumb Fs.
All right.
Goddamn weebs.
So, Burley, thank you so much for coming on again, man. We're looking forward to having you again for the June 5th episode. We're going to be doing our E3 predictions episode. So we're looking forward to having you back on for that, man.
Can't wait.
Yep. Yes. Thank you so much, man. Yep. And Dan, where can people find you? And where can people find you on trains around the Yamanote line?
You can find me exclusively on trains at the minute. I can't leave trains alone. I've done numerous train streams on my Twitch. If you like trains and me talking about adventures in Japan, you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/pressstart2game. That's four words in one. Fact fans, press start two game. Just all clumped together. Mm-hmm. And I have a YouTube channel. And if you missed it on Twitch, I re-upload my videos to my YouTube channel. And my long-awaited project is getting nearly done. Hopefully in this week I'll have a new interesting video series going up on my YouTube channel, which will be meh.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, actually, I'm probably I don't know about tomorrow, but sometime this coming week I'm gonna be streaming Destroy All Humans. Yeah.
Oh, great game.
Classic game. Yeah. I can't wait to play that. I'm gonna be playing it on the Series X. So yeah, it should be fun. It's on Game Pass now, so went ahead and downloaded it, so I'm looking forward to playing that. So,
ooh, nice.
All right. So to end the show, our indie recording artist spotlight. So this week's spotlight is on Rodello's Machine. Rodello's Machine is the combination of dedicated musicians Nate Donis and Colby Knickerbocker. With the earthy, robust vocals of Nate Donis and the creative production of Colby Knickerbocker, the music takes on an animated and lively spirit full of inspired melodies and lyrics with a warm acoustic backbone. From their album titled Red Dust, and the song is called The Breeze. This has been The Arena, a multi-platform gaming news podcast, episode 37. I'm your host, Expat, along with my co-host, Dan, and our special guest, Burlyman Gaming. We hope to see you in the next one. So take care, everyone. Peace out.
Choo-choo!
I wake up in the morning in this great blue state. golden fingers caress my face, slips through the window on a silky breeze, a dreamer's land to plant some seeds. All my doubts, a lighted mirror reflecting out every true potential, a bedrock belief in elaborate plot to set this bird free. Every element fades, every color is attached. She paints pictures blue and green, and I release them to the sea for the ancient memory. Just as fleeting as a breeze, she paints pictures blue and green, and I release them to the sea. How we lay in the sunset, white couch in June, her body sings, and I join the tune. All the sirens calling, crows leave their trees, but a peace pervades us and the dreamer's dream. From every element it makes, every color that's attached, she paints pictures blue and green, and I release them to the sea for the ancient memories. Just as fleeting as a breeze, she paints pictures blue and green, and I release them to the sea.